This is RÚV English Radio with Darren Adam, daily English language radio from Iceland's national broadcaster, RÚV.
Hello, it's RÚV English Radio. I'm Darren Adam. Thanks very much for your company on this Monday afternoon. Time for another episode of The Week in Iceland. My guest, once again, no stranger to the show. Hello again to Ingibjörg Sara Guðmundsdóttir. Welcome, welcome, welcome.
Hello, thank you for welcoming me again.
So where do we start? Because we were saying before we switched on the microphones, it's not been the most news-intensive period. We're all kind of waiting for the eruption to go.
Yeah.
But it hasn't. But there have been some significant stories in the last week. Shall we start with the teachers?
Yeah.
Strike being called off.
Yeah.
Because this was a kind of 11th hour deal. I think it was literally 11 o'clock at night when the teachers and the unions decided, the management, what they were going to do here. So where are we with this? Because the strikes are off.
The strikes are off. And now the teachers union, it just, they signed the deal with the municipalities.
Yes,
you know,
yes.
Reykjavik.
So they were like the management in this situation.
Yeah, so teachers, it's a bit complicated because teachers on, like, in grunnskóli, which is the first elementary school, they have union contracts with the municipalities, like Reykjavik, like Akranes, Borganes, the towns.
The councils, really.
The councils, yeah. And the secondary education, like Mentaskólin í Reykjavík, secondary education, they have deals with the government. So it's like two deals, or two, like, you know, the councils and the government. And but they reached a deal, and now we just have to see if the teachers will agree, because the representatives for the teachers, they signed the deal, but then they have to go talk to the teachers all around the country now and represent the deal, and then they will vote on it.
But it's also, and it is quite complicated, but part of this is about giving the teachers the kind of recognition, the status that they'd previously agreed and it was agreed would happen.
Yeah.
But that comes with a price tag, which is a wage rise of, it seems, 24%.
Yeah.
And the doubt now is, or the question is, does that apply to every teacher in every situation? We don't know.
No, we don't. I don't think we 100% know, but that's the general agreement.
Yes.
Because this dates back to at least 2016, when teachers, they one of the things they were fighting for now, because in 2016 they agreed to less like compensation when you retire.
Pension.
Pension.
Yes. Yeah.
Like agreed to lower that and would get raises instead. But then that never happened.
Mm-hmm.
So they were really pissed off now. And but now, and they also want the recognition that they are like experts.
Yes.
So they want to have the same wages as expert in the open market.
So there's lots of interlocking pieces
here. Yeah.
Which gets us to the 24% at this stage. And I think even the unions themselves have said, well, you know, is there the money for this? We want this to be a sustainable deal, essentially.
Yeah.
And so we're in a strange position.
It is a strange position. And the councils didn't want to make the deal because they said this will bankrupt us.
Mm.
So they say they couldn't afford it. And they have had some ideas about the government pitching in.
Yes, to make up the difference.
Either with money or like taking some things that the councils are doing and do that instead. So
it's a confused picture.
It is, it is.
It? And as you say, one part of that might be the teachers might not want to sign, but we don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
But the bottom line for parents at the moment, as we sit here at 11 minutes past three on a Monday afternoon, is that the strikes are off.
Yeah. The strikes just immediately were put off when the deal was signed. And you don't have to worry about that for at least now.
Yes. Hopefully by the time you hear this conversation at 4 o'clock, that will still be,
still
be the case. Let's go back to the weekend, because on Sunday particularly, but also for much of the weekend, yellow and indeed orange warnings in big parts of Iceland.
Mm-hmm.
And the weather was pretty bizarre yesterday, wasn't it?
It
was very wintry, very wild, but very changeable too.
Yeah. It was very like mixing of hot and cold weather.
Yeah.
Snowstorms with sun in between. very windy and also calm.
Yes, in all between. In the space of sort of 5 minutes.
Yeah.
We had friends over from the UK and I drove them up firstly to Borgarnes because I really like Borgarnes. Mm-hmm. We went to the pool there and it was -4 degrees and they're sitting there in the hot pot with snow forming on their head and ice forming, thinking, this is insane. This is crazy. This just don't do this anywhere else. And then we went from Borgarnes and we were lucky, I guess, given the road conditions because they were pretty ropey at times.
Yeah.
But, you know, we got to Geysir and we got to Gullfoss and we didn't have time to go to Þingvelli, but we drove past it. So we did that whole area. And the weather changed so quickly that we parked at Geysir mm-hmm. at the visitor centre. By the time we'd walked to the geyser itself to see it erupting, you couldn't see in front of your face because there was ice and snow blowing blizzard-like onto your face. Then when we got back to the car, it was all fine again.
Yeah.
So it's really changeable.
It's really changeable. And this happens sometimes in the winter. Mm. And especially, I think it's some special weather condition. I'm not an expert, but it's with this snowstorms and then the wind.
Mm. Mm.
So it's all over the place.
It was so windy, actually, that when we went to Geysir, one of my friends was saying, I thought it would smell more like sulfur. And I said, well, if you stand over there, which is where the wind's blowing, it really will.
Yeah.
And a distance of about 15 metres made all of the difference as we're standing downwind of it. Now, it did cause quite a few problems over the course of the weekend as well. We had the good news, I suppose, from East Iceland near Eskifjörður. Rescue teams saved a foreign tourist who was stranded.
Mm-hmm.
You had people flying into the airport. We'll talk about the airport in a minute as well, mm-hmm. but people flying into Keflavik Airport. And this, I think, happened to me once many, many years ago, that the plane lands perfectly safely, but the wind is so strong that they can't open the doors and get people off the plane safely.
Yeah.
So they were stuck there on board for, 4 hours?
Yeah, something like that. That has also happened to me.
Yes.
That you land the plane and it's just okay. But because of the strong winds, the tunnels from the plane to the airport building, they can't be put up in like certain amounts of wind. So if the wind is over like 20 meters or something, meters per second or something like that.
And it's the same with the steps. They can't put the airport steps
up and the steps as well.
I think it certainly did happen to me a very, very long time ago. I know we've covered this story before in the last couple of years when people have been stuck on that plane for more than 4 hours.
Yeah.
And it's not fun when you land and think, well, you know, we got through that. We got through the wind. Yeah. We landed fine. We just can't get off the plane because they can't open the door.
Yeah.
And I wonder if we'll talk about the airport expansion in a minute, but maybe at some point in the future, the airport will expand in such a way that there's a kind of hangar, I guess, where you can actually take the planes indoors.
Yeah, that would be great. Yeah, that would be great for these kinds of situations because this happens, I think. I'm not like sure how often it happens, but it can happen, especially in the winter when the winds are so strong, but the airplane can land easily, but it's the tunnel that or the stairs that caused the problem.
Yes, well, I remember it happening at least once since I've been here in the last couple of years. We had in Sandgerði as well the sight of these boats that had broken loose from their moorings.
Yeah.
And the rescue teams, as well as trying to fix the roof on a house in the town, were also trying to get the boats tied back up again.
Yeah. This happens sometimes, and especially like this weekend that when, because there was strong winds, but also high tides.
Mm.
So the tide was very high and came very close to the land and sometimes the sea went up to the land. So if it's like really high tides and windy and the waves can, then especially the small boats can be untied. So it's really important to secure them well.
And Vestmannaeyjar cut off as well, I think, because the ferry sailings were cancelled earlier today. And when I was last in Vestmannaeyjar, I spoke to the mayor of the town. Of course, there's a conversation there about connecting the Westman Islands to the mainland with a tunnel, perhaps.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people on the Westman Islands today in Vestmannaeyjar would think, yeah, that would have been quite handy.
Yes. this has been the conversation for, I don't know, for the last 20 years or something or more.
Yeah.
Because it's always been a problem with connecting the island to the main Iceland. Because it's so unreliable and people have to get some, have to go to a doctor, have to get some services up on the mainland.
Yeah.
So it's really problematic for them.
And when you go on the summer crossing, or the crossing that's possible in good weather, yeah. which is the shorter one, basically.
Yeah, Lanterhöp.
Yeah, yeah. When you go to that ferry terminal on a clear day, you think, I could basically swim that. It looks so close, doesn't it?
Yeah. And that has happened.
Well, oh, I'm sure,
there was
yeah.
a sea wreckage, so a boat sank and the man swam to land.
I mean, I definitely couldn't swim it. I'm just saying. No. Like
yeah, yeah, yeah. It's
it looks really close.
Yeah. And people have swam it, like, you know, when you swim the channel or something like that.
Yeah.
But it's 30 minutes something sailing.
So it's a lovely crossing. It's a nice little trip.
Really lovely. And then you can also go to Thorlákshöfn, which is the longer route, which is like 3 hours.
That feels a lot longer. I mean, it's a lot longer, but it feels like a lot longer. Because we were driving around the country once clockwise on Route 1. And so you've got to go quite a long way past where you want to get that crossing.
Yeah.
And then it's a 3-hour crossing instead of a 30-minute crossing.
Yeah.
So it really did add on a lot of travel time to get to Vestmannaeyjar.
And it did, yeah. So before Lanterhöfn came to be, it was always this journey. But it's shorter now, but this is the problem. And they want, obviously, the tunnels or the tunnel.
Mm.
But it could be a problem because Vestmann Islands is an active volcanic area.
Yes, yes.
Just erupted 50 years ago.
Yes, and talking of active volcanic areas, as we sit here, no eruption yet again on the Reykjanes Peninsula, and we're just waiting for it because there's more magma now under the ground than we think of as the limit.
Yeah.
But so, nothing.
No, nothing happening. These could be our famous last words.
They could be, again, but in an hour when you hear the conversation, the teacher strike might be back on and might have had an eruption.
Yeah.
But no indication that either of those things is going to happen,
no,
by the way.
No, definitely
we should
not.
Say. But we're keeping an eye on it here.
We're keeping a close eye on it.
Yeah.
And the weather, the Met Office is keeping a close eye on it and no signs of it erupting.
It's possible, isn't it? I mean, you'll find some scientists who say at least it's possible that the longer this goes on, the more likely it is that there won't be an eruption and maybe that this particular system has gone back to sleep. It's in the range of possibilities.
It is. Though I don't think they think it's a highly possible situation right now. But that could happen. And that's the problem with the eruptions.
Yes.
They're so unpredictable. And that's also what makes it so dangerous because now we have so much magma under the earth that it's such a short time that they could go off.
Yes, and the warning period is 20, 30 minutes, I think, isn't it? Which is why it's not advised to be in Grindavik at the moment, for example, which is why the Blue Lagoon has a protocol in place to get people out of the pool really, really quickly.
Although the Blue Lagoon is open.
It is open, absolutely,
But they have these protocols because if it starts erupting, then they have to get out of there.
Yes, and that's worked well, it has to be said.
It has to be said,
on previous occasions.
Yeah.
And it's really strange because when I came to Iceland, to live in Iceland, that volcanic system hadn't woken up in the way that it has. Now, there had been two big eruptions, but not this series in this quite localized location around Svartsengi.
Yeah.
And it would be interesting because it seemed as if we were going to get 10 years of this. That's what we thought maybe 6 months ago. Every couple of months for the next decade, we would have an eruption. But it's possible that it's gone to sleep.
Yeah.
And it's so interesting that we don't know. It's so interesting that experts can't tell.
Exactly.
Yet.
Yeah. It's really interesting because usually, like they say, because it's been so continuous, these eruptions, that the earth is like it's softened up.
Yes.
And that's why it's erupting in exactly the same place every time.
Mm-hmm. But then the crust is weaker there.
The crust is weaker and it's easier access. But what we're seeing now might be, you know, they have like more resistance or something, and it can't get up, or the pressure from the mantle of the earth or the center is not enough to push the lava through the cracks.
And the other thing it can do, of course, is if we get a magma run, which we sometimes think is going to be the precursor to an eruption, sometimes that's all it is. Sometimes the magma just flows under the ground at great speed.
Yeah, and we maybe remember that from the 10th of November when Grindavik was, everyone had to leave because there was such a big magma run then that they were very afraid that something catastrophic would happen.
Yes.
But then it didn't happen for like a month after that.
Yeah. And we had a magma run. In fact, it was the time of Sungvakeppnin last year. I remember it was the day of the final that we all were on panic stations thinking there was going to be an eruption. There wasn't. There was just the magma flow. So the takeaway is no one knows anything, really.
Really, yeah. We just have to
Yes.
Pay very much attention to it and be prepared.
Which is horribly unsettling for the people of Grindavik, of course.
It is.
Talking of the consequences of eruptions, it always surprises people, it amazes people, that the airport is pretty much entirely unaffected by this. It's only 10 kilometres away from this area.
Yeah.
You can literally be in a plane quite safely flying over it.
Yeah.
The flight schedules are almost completely, I think entirely unaffected when this happens, because it's not an ash eruption. Bringing us back to the conversation about the airport, Keflavik International Airport has expanded. It's grown by a third. I was going to say overnight, obviously. It took a while to build the new wing, but it's a lot bigger than it was.
It is. Mm. It's this new building. It's the new wing of the airport, and it's larger than or the size of Harpa, the music.
The new bit is the size of Harpa.
Yeah.
Wow, that's big.
And they've obviously, as you said, been planning this for quite a while and building the building and but they think this is an 25,000 square meters, so it's around the size of Harpa. And has a new luggage system and a waiting hall and I think six gates, gates or something like that.
And I love the airport. It's a place that I've spent a lot of time over the years. Happy memories of coming to Iceland and less happy memories of leaving Iceland. But I do notice in the last couple of years it's really needed that extra space.
Yeah, and this has been coming up to that.
Yes. I think there's, I forget which gate it is, but there's a part of the airport where if you've got four international flights leaving at the same sort of time, no one knows where to stand. It's just rammed full of people.
Yeah.
So a bit of extra space is very, very welcome. And it's a sign, of course, isn't it, that people are wanting to come to Iceland.
Yeah.
It's a sign that people want to leave Iceland. I don't know. But it's certainly a sign that any sort of post-COVID slump in interest in the country has picked back up again.
Yeah, it is. And it is like a positive sign for tourism. And apparently people want to come here. So that's really great. And this will be a good addition to the rest of the airport. As you said, it has been quite crowded.
Yes. Well, we're going to be making a show there for Roof English Radio next week, I think, or possibly the week after. We'll take a look at that new real estate, if you will, that new area at the international airport. Right, to the north of the country, to Blunduas, and a story that just broke earlier today. Sad news, 23 people hit by this mass redundancy at the slaughterhouse in the town. 28 people worked there, 23 were laid off on Friday, which is a big hit for a town the size of Blunduas.
Yeah, it's a big hit. And it's always when these like mass things happen that so many people are laid off at the same time, it's a big hit for such a small town. So it's really not good for the town. And obviously in these small towns there's maybe not a lot of opportunities for work, or let's say like less opportunities than in the cities and larger towns. So it has quite an effect on the town.
Well, the head of the municipality, Hunabich municipality, who's Peter Aurason, says this is one of the largest workplaces in the area. It's a big blow in terms of scale. It would be comparable to 3,000 people losing their jobs in Reykjavik after a single round of layoffs, which gives you a sense of just how devastating this is going to be. Now, the company wants to do what it can to keep these or to find alternative sources of work and other facilities for these people. And the slaughterhouse is still open. It's not been closed.
No.
But operations have been reduced quite dramatically. So hopes there would be that it is possible to find these 23 people different job somewhere else.
Yeah, hopefully. And that's also like Peter says, it's such a heavy blow for the community. So it would be good to get these people a job that for, because that's Blönduós is also the center of like the northwest of Iceland.
Yes, yes.
So to be able to give these people another job would be very good.
It's a great part of the country. If you get the chance to tour outside of Reykjavik, heartily recommend that, you know, that area, the northwest, and of course the northeast as well, when you get into Akureyri, Húsavík, the north coast essentially is,
it's beautiful, isn't it? Yeah, beautiful, and lots of cool places to visit.
Yeah, some really, really nice towns and really cool places, as you say. Okay, today, wherever you are in Iceland, it is Bun Day.
Yes, Bolledagur.
Bolledagur.
Yes.
And if you are interested in the language, why don't we say botl?
I think it's because it's derived from a Danish word, bolle or something. Yeah. So it's smooth L's. So it's B-O-L-L-U, but it's usually we would say atl.
Yes. But not in this case because it's a Danish word.
Bolledagur.
Bolledagur.
Yes.
Bun Day.
Yeah.
Why do we get so excited about, well, because they taste great, obviously, but why do we have the buns on Bun Day?
Yes. The Bun Day is, so it's part of the Lent for Easter.
Mm.
And it starts, I think it starts around now.
I think it starts on Wednesday.
Wednesday, yeah. So we have Bolledagur today, and then tomorrow we have Bomb Day, if you translate it directly. And then we have a lot of salted meat.
Yes.
And then we have Ash Wednesday, which is like for kids when they dress up and go to the shops and sing for candy.
And that feels a bit like Halloween.
It is like Halloween.
Yeah.
So
today is all about the buns.
Yes.
But as we just wrote a little story for Roof English earlier to try to explain this, it's not just about the joy of eating the buns.
Because
if you're a parent particularly, you've got to watch out for being spanked by your kid.
Yeah. Because, this is some tradition from very long ago.
I don't exactly
know how long ago, but like the 18th and 19th century. You could have... it's called bolluvöndur. You have a stick and you like make it like you do something like...
Stick bits of paper on it.
Stick bits of paper.
Decorate it.
And then you can slap some people in the ass and say, bolla, bolla, bolla. And then something.
And the only way for some reason to stop them is to give them buns.
Yes. Yeah, that's the... Yes.
So be warned, if you've got yourself a big box of buns... And you're thinking you're going to sit there and eat them all. Keep some.
Yeah.
To fend off the kids that are going to spank you with the wands.
Yeah. But some people think it's the best day of the year because the bolla is so good to eat.
Well, we had some in the office earlier. Yeah. You're on a late shift today, so you missed them, I think.
Yeah, I missed them. But I got some earlier, so it's not entirely... tragic for
no,
me.
Okay. So we're all well fed then.
Yes.
That is good. Now, the most popular choice is probably like a cream bun, I think, cream and custard.
Yeah.
What's your favourite?
My favourite is, it's like two, there are like two kinds of, you know, dough for the bollas. You have with gear. I don't know what that is. Yeast.
That's the sort of yeast one, isn't it? Yeah, yeast bun.
Yeah, I don't like that one. The other one, which has like more watery...
It's a sort of like a shoe pastry.
Yeah, it's kind of like, it's like a shoe pastry.
Mm-hmm.
And you have cream. I don't like the jam in the middle, but some people do. And then you have like chocolate on top.
Yes, yes.
And it's also, it's good, like now we have very much variations of this. You could have some other filling than jam. You could have like something sprinkled on top or another kind of, you know, sweets on top.
Peanut butter, do you think?
Maybe for some people. I don't like peanut butter.
Okay.
But that might be cool to try.
Yeah, I would put peanut butter on everything.
Yes.
I have to say. or indeed chocolate. I'd be happy with a chocolate. In fact, if you mixed peanut butter and chocolate and put it on...
Yeah, that would be probably a good mix.
On one of the cakes, though. Yeah. I'd be absolutely delighted with that. So no question at all.
And I think bakeries today like make thousands of bolla.
I read a million.
Yeah, that's... probably it.
Yeah, I mean, the population of this country is just under 400,000, which means that everyone's eating 2.5 of these things today.
Yeah, and the bakeries also start, like, they don't just do it today. They started last week.
Yes.
And maybe go through this week with Polish.
Now, my colleague Margaret from the Polish desk, from Ruch Polski, was saying that there was a similar kind of event taking place a week ago.
Yeah, in Poland.
In Poland.
Yeah, and here as well.
And, of course, lots of Polish people living in Iceland. So, what, does she get two buns? Does she have two bun days?
I think so. She's lucky.
She is indeed. Well, enjoy Bola Daga. Enjoy the cakes, the buns that you are enjoying today. And if you didn't get one, well, you've only got a year to wait until the next one.
Exactly. And maybe if you're lucky, the bakeries will have some rests for you this week.
Yes,
so
yes,
make sure you go this today or tomorrow.
And I wouldn't normally end the show by saying this, but avoid being spanked.
Yeah.
If you can. Thank you very much. We'll talk again.
Thank you.
This is Ruth English Radio. My guest today is Ingeborg Sara Guðmundsdóttir, and we have had a look at the week in Iceland. You can get in touch with Ruth English anytime. We're english@ruv.is.
There is more from Ruv English with all the news from Iceland in English at ruv.is/English. Ruv English Radio is a daily English language radio from Iceland's national broadcaster, Ruv.